every freaking second of the day, I'm going to do it. Everybody wants to be mother freaking wealthy. Are you willing to adapt? Are you willing to change? How uncomfortable are you willing to get? How willing are you going to be to allow me to help you? This is a marathon, not a sprint. You give up your right to be average and ordinary. You gotta show up earlier. You gotta be here later. You gotta hit harder. Be more productive. Be more focused. If you don't see it that way, you will fail at it. You guys have been the pillar and the backbone of Family First Life now for quite some time. Keep growing.
Hey everybody, how are we doing this week? Jimmy Hensley here. Just got back from convention. It was amazing. Integrity is spending a grip of money for us. It's going to be a wonderful year in 2024. They actually came up with an AI program, Ask Integrity. All your leads will be in there. It'll give you all your clients' information down to the directions to their house, height, weight, everything. It's amazing. I can't believe the money they're pouring into us getting better leads to do our business better. It's really exciting. Factory, what do we have new? And oh, we got Joe right there. Joe, give us 1 second and we'll introduce you, buddy.
Yo, I'm
nice,
here.
Nice. Hey, Factory, what's new and upcoming for us, sir?
Yep. So there's a little convention recap photo of you. How crazy was convention, Uncle Jimmy?
It was amazing, man. Honestly, like, Barbara from Shark Tank was, that lady is so impressive. I didn't know if I would, I don't know, man. She was my favorite speaker. And then just feeling the power of David Goggins and everybody else. I mean, and then just the energy in the room. I mean, Sean Mike just hit it out of the park. He interviewed a lot of great people, but truly, I think, I went to the very first convention. That one was amazing. It was the first one. I went last year. I like the fact it was in a smaller building, more personable, and I think they really got it pointing us in the right direction. I think convention next year is going to be even bigger, even better.
Crazy.
But what we got out of this year's is going to carry us through 2024. If you didn't go, I'm going to say it, shame on you. You got to get involved. You got to plug in. You got to figure it out. So you know when it's coming. It's always the end of January and the first couple days of February. Set your calendars now. Don't miss out. There's so much information that they plugged into us. There's so many great. I mean, I was sitting next to Steve Giordano, and that dude is just a beast. I mean, I asked him, you know, what'd you do? He said 1.25. And I was like, million? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, Wow. Are you going to do this year? Over two. That's his goal. So just being around people like that is amazing.
All right. Next up, we've got our latest, newest integrity partner.
Hey.
Sun Maggio. Congratulations to her.
Nice.
And then latest update, we have our 2024 producer cruise. That started yesterday. Qualification period, February 7th through May 7th. $100,000 issue paid in life gets you sailing in July. It departs Miami, Florida. I know that the date of when it's going to be happening is pending, so stay tuned for that. And then lastly, our quote of the day is, the sole meaning of life is to serve humanity.
Tolstoy. Right, nice. Joe, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, man. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Perfect, man. So, Joe's an integrity partner. Joe, what branch did you serve in, Joe? You served, right?
Air Force.
Thank you for your service. So Joe was an MP who went to a stay-at-home house dad and then kicking and screaming, become an insurance agent. Then his wife's going to have another kid, and he's like, F this, I'm not doing staying at home, and built a major, humongous industry with his agency. I mean, what are you at, $23 million, Joe? What'd you do?
Yes, sir. Yeah, 23, 22 and a half, somewhere around there.
More numbers than I can count. Oh my gosh. So Joe, tell us about yourself. How'd you get into the industry? Who brought you in? Why do you think life insurance?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet.
I don't get out much lately. And if you see me move quickly, it's because there's literally this huge wasp in my farmhouse, and I think it's trying to stalk me right now. So anyways, My background, simple. I was in the Air Force. I got out and I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. And my wife had a great job. She was an air traffic controller. She made great money. We had our first son and we had to grow up and buy life insurance. And the guy that came over and sold me some life insurance told me that I should become an insurance agent. And I was like, very colorfully said, you lost your bleep, bleep, bleep in mind and no, thank you. Have a nice day. And he said, I'll buy you a beer. I said, make it two and I'll listen to what you have to say.
That's awesome. So is that person still in the industry?
You know what? I don't know actually, because I went down an interesting path. So if I were to look back, there is no reason why I should be successful in this industry, because I was that guy. I had non-negotiable no's on what I wouldn't do. I wasn't going to talk to my friends, family, and neighbors. I wasn't going to go to hotel meetings. There was a bunch of things that I told him I wasn't going to do. And then once he, you know, answered all those in the right manner, I got started, but it took me 9 months to get my license because I just had my first kid. And I don't know if there's any parents on here, but the first is always the first.
The experiment. Right? It's the experiment.
Yeah, it's where life just changed dramatically. And so I was trying to figure out life at that point. So anyways, I took 9 months to get my license. And then when I got my license, I called up Trey Honeycutt. I said, hey, dude, I got my license. What are you doing? Because I know Trey from previous. I know Stephen Yee. I'm just name dropping. I know as soon as I got my license, I called all the people I knew. I'm like, I'm going to do insurance. What are you doing right now? And Trey was like, I've already been doing insurance and I'm going to look at this company. It was Family First Life and it was Andrew Taylor was having a meeting. And I said, well, at that point I had no loyalty to the guy that shared the opportunity with me. He probably already thought I quit. And the other company, I didn't even work there. So I started at Family First Life with Trey in September or October of 2014. So it wasn't the first year that Family First Life launched, but it was the end of the first year. We were still walking uphill both ways barefoot at that time. We had one insurance carrier. And we had mortgage protection leads that took 4 weeks to come in. And they were, I don't know, $40 each at that time.
So fast forward to when did the light bulb go on for you to say, okay, I'm in, I understand, I can make a great living doing this, and I want to build an agency. How did that come? Because I have a lot of people that are brand new. I have people that have been here for 10 years. I have people that are right in the middle of the road that are on this call. And I don't know if they, and I always like to tell people, you know, what's your work ethic? I always ask that. But when did that light bulb come on when you were like, I can make this a career and I'm going to get my wife out of her government job being an air traffic controller?
You know, sometimes you don't see the big picture right away. So for me, it was very gradual. It wasn't just an aha moment. It was my first year in the business. I legitimately sold 2 days a week around my wife's schedule. I had a toddler to take care of and she had the job and I was going to school or whatever. And I enjoyed going out and meeting people. It was fun. And I was just making money. I wasn't really even paying attention closely to how much money I was making. But at the end of the first year, I got my 1099s back. It was two carriers. By the end of the first year, I had Americo and Royal Neighbors, and that was it. So I got two 1099s. And that first year, I don't know, it's me, so I can say it. I made 132 grand part-time. You can edit that out if you need to. But that's what I made, and that's, my wife came to me, and she's like, what are you doing? Is it legal? Because as far as she was concerned, I was just getting out of the house to get away from the kid, the boy, is how I called him, the boy. I need to go out and talk to other adults, because I was starting to say kid words to adults, and it was bugging me. So that got my attention. And then I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep doing this. And I just made sure I buttoned up my schedule a little bit better. My wife treated it a little more
serious.
Yeah, like legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a hobby. And then the second year I went out and made more money. And that year, I want to say we were going to have our second, or it was very briefly. It was very early on. And what was cool was our lifestyle started to change. So my wife had obviously the big government job with benefits, and our vacations got a little longer. You know, things change like that, right? Having a business is amazing. If you currently are part-time and you have a spouse who's working, there should be no, you know, I'm not a tax professional, but you should be writing off everything. And so it was great. It's just, we were able to level up our lifestyle. Sure. In year two. But I did tell my wife, I was like, I can barely take care of one child, let alone two. Right. So we're going to have to figure this out, because are we doing daycare? We didn't really believe in that. So it was, she's going to have to resign. And so we moved from the Bay Area. I lived in the Bay. Well, we lived up in the Bay, and we moved back down to Southern California. So for the most part, I built my business in, the majority was all in California. Wow. And I ran everywhere. I ran Southern California. I ran the Bay. I ran up to Sacramento. You know, all in homes. That, I guess that was more down the road. That wasn't when I was part-time. When I was part-time, it was exclusively in Alameda County, if you're familiar with the Bay Area. So from Berkeley down to Fremont and everything in between is where I ran. Okay. And if you know that area, it's crazy diverse. Like, there's no two people are the same there. And so I just fit in. I didn't care, whatever, I'll sell some insurance. And it was fun for me. I enjoyed it. Now, once we decided that, hey, I'm going to actually do this full time and you're going to resign, that was when a lot of people were like, what is happening? I thought he was unemployed and just going to school, right? That, they're like, when my wife was resigning, they were like, what are you going to do for money? And we're like, oh, I got this part-time thing going, you know? And I still didn't recruit. So the first 2 years in the business, 2.5, I didn't recruit anybody. And I just sold. And it was part-time. So for those of you who either have had a slow start or a fast start, and now you're kind of having to get your traction again, I would tell you, none of that matters. None of that matters. What matters, there's things that I'll touch on here in a moment, but for me, I think when things shifted was when everything was on me. And I was asked a couple of questions about, do you plan on selling insurance forever? And I said, is this a trick question? Because it wasn't that difficult. I was enjoying it. So I didn't know what they meant by that. But what they meant was, are you going to have to sell insurance forever?
Mm.
That is the real question. And so for those of you who are not building a team, you have to ask yourself, am I going to have to sell insurance forever? Right. And for me, I was like, as much as I enjoy it, that's not something I want to do. So I decided I wanted to build an agency. And that's when I got started. So I want to say that was probably summer of 2016 is when I recruited. And I want to say my, like Trey, I was his first recruit. Stephen Yee was my first recruit.
Wow. So you brought Stephen Yee into the game.
Yes.
There's your leader.
And then he quit.
What?
And then he came back a year later.
Wait, he quit?
Yeah, he totally quit. Because at that time he didn't have, and I'll touch on that, but he didn't have no reason to be uncomfortable, to dial, to sell, to grind. He was
single.
He lived at home. He was single. He lived at home with his mom. He didn't need much money to survive. There was no drive. There was no, and I'm not talking any kind of mess about him. But the difference between that time and when he came back was he was engaged and he had to pay for a wedding.
Gave him drive.
Different kind of motivation at that point. Right?
Yeah.
So he was a different person. And then everything that was still here before, right, was just taken more serious.
Wow.
And then I recruited a number of people that I think I've recruited 7 or 8 Hall of Fame producers. And, I enjoy recruiting. I actually enjoy recruiting more than I do selling, but you got to sell to pay bills. Recruiting doesn't pay bills. Recruiting. Mm. If I were to give you an analogy, it's like your paycheck pays your bills, but the money you put into the 401k or into the IRA or into your investments is recruiting. Mm. Right? Selling is hunting. Recruiting is farming. A little different.
Yeah.
You have to plant, you have to sow, you have to harvest, you have to weed, chase the birds away, all kinds of stuff. Right? It's not instant gratification. Hunting, you shoot, you either hit or you miss, right? Most of you are out there hunting mm-hmm. when you're selling insurance and you either got one or you didn't. Right? But when it comes to recruiting, you treat it the same way. You can't. It doesn't work because there's a process. People need to see what's in it for them. Right? And that's where the business will change for you. I'm not saying you shouldn't buy other people's vision for a time or borrow their motivation. But if you don't have a vision for what you want long term, you won't make it. And so that's really what everything's about. If you can see it, you're so pulled by it. This business is not hard. It's really not. But if it's hard for you, you know, with that, there's a bunch of trainers I will train on the how to's. But what I want to train on is, if you don't focus on what's important for you and your family, none of the how-tos will work because you're not driven to accomplish what you want to accomplish. It's just superficial. If you say, well, I just need to make some money. There's jobs out there. Go get a job. This isn't a job. This is bigger than a job. This is you're protecting families. You're recruiting others and giving them direction that provides for their family. So this is bigger than that. You have to have something bigger than yourself and a vision of what you want to accomplish. Now that can change over time. It can. I 5 years ago, you'd have said, hey, Joe, you're going to buy a farm and live in Texas. I'd probably have told you you're crazy. I lived in Southern California, which I enjoyed at the time. But now I got 50 acres in Texas and a whole bunch of animals, and it's awesome. But I will tell you that it's motivated me to another level for the business, right? Selling more, recruiting more. At this juncture, it's mainly recruiting, but I do sell because tractors are expensive. Diesel trucks are expensive. So, but that's the main gist. If you haven't solidified what's super important for you and given yourself, you know, if you just bust out a piece of paper and write down 20 things that you want, if you can't actually do that, that is probably what's holding you back, because this is transactional for you. And if it's transactional for you, then you're going to avoid being uncomfortable. And this business is all about being uncomfortable in the home or selling over the phone or recruiting someone and telling them, hey, you know, having tough conversations, all of that is uncomfortable. But if you know what you want and this is going to lead you to that, you'll have those uncomfortable conversations, which will make you a better person to sell insurance, because it won't be about you and the money you make. It'll be about where you're going, and it'll also make you a better recruiter.
So when you, so what do you look for in a recruit? I mean, what did you see in Steven? Was he just another person? Did you know of him? Do you know him through somebody? You know, they always talk about a link takes you to a link, can take you to a leader. It might take five people to get you to that Steven Yee, right? What did you see in Steven? Because I don't think he was very impressive at first. I mean, I talked to him all the time and he was like, bro, I was broke. You know, I'm a second generation from another country, you know, and I didn't make very much money. And then all of a sudden he bought into this, understood what it was, and he created a monster agency, right? And
yeah.
What did you see? How? Help me. Help them, because they're out there. Those Steven Yees are out there, right? And we don't know who they are, because if you look at my nephew, Andrew, he was a kid. He was not, you know what I mean? He wasn't nothing special. I'm not saying he was where he was, but I'm just saying he was a kid, and now look at him. And if you were to like, and we had an agent that was in this office, and he wanted, I want professionals. I want people that under entrepreneurs. And it's like, all these Steven Yees and Andrew Taylors, Josh and Alondra, Anita and Hayden, you know what I mean? None of you were professionals, man, but you figured it out. So what is your formula? If you have one, how did you find Steven? Like why, how?
Yeah. So I used to train on this, but first and foremost, I never considered myself an insurance agent. I was, you know, a cop in the military, and law enforcement and insurance are so far apart, it's not even funny. It's not. It's like opposite ends of the spectrum. So what separates folks is, you know what? I fall back on this all the time. Know, like, and trust. If I know you, and I like you, and I trust you, you have a higher probability of success. Because if I know you, there's, I don't know if I want to say respect, but there's commonality there, there's friendship there, there's a level of trust, right? Likeability is important, because how many of you have recruited someone and you don't want to answer the phone for them because they suck the life out of you, or they annoy you, or you can't be yourself with them? Okay. So that comes to likability. So if I know you, that builds trust. If I like you, I'll answer the phone for you to help you. And then trust. Trust is important too, because there's liability in this business. Okay. I have to trust that, or they have to trust me, and I have to trust them. So I built my business off of warm market. Now I have recruited cold market, but I would say a lot of it had to do with what I just said, usually warm market. But if I did recruit somebody cold market, I built a relationship with them on the know, like, and trust. Right. I don't know if you know Will Lohr. Will Lohr was cold market. Seher Farage was cold market. But Trey was warm market for me. Steven was warm market for me. Jacob Medford was warm market. Mac Agabor was warm market. There's a ton of people in my business who are Hall of Fame producers that are warm market. And if you look, at a lot of folks that have Hall of Fame producers and big agencies in their business, it has to do with they had some kind of relationship or built some kind of relationship with the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a level of trust. They're trusting you that they're going to spend their last $1,000 to buy leads, right? They're trusting you that this is going to, that what you're saying is not just you trying to make a buck off them, right? Just think, know, like, and trust. And if you can check those off, and it doesn't have to be day one, it can be over time, but that's who will be successful here. That's my opinion. That's my experience. And legitimately, that's my business. I have very little attrition in my business, at least from my perspective. New people can come and go, but usually the new people that come and go are cold market, that they weren't able to build any kind of connection with anybody. No reason to stick. But if you just recruited the people that you knew, right, where there's a level of trust and there was a likability, right, you're gonna work with them. But cold market is rough. Sometimes you're thinking, I'm just going to make a buck off this person. Mm-hmm. Or they think you're just trying to make a buck off them. Unless you build that relationship on know, like, and trust.
So
that's recruiting for
yeah,
me.
Yeah. So you said you did a lot of your recruiting between appointments. Is that correct? And
yeah, as far as the how I ran.
Yeah, your schedule.
The other thing you have to understand is just because you recruit somebody doesn't mean you recruited them. They got to get a belief check.
There we go.
They got to get a charge back and not quit. They got to recruit somebody and get them paid. And then that person needs to quit. So I'm constantly recruiting the people that I've recruited. That's part of the process. So when I used to sell in the field, my drive time would either be when I was new, was listening to audios to get better, or it was talking to agents or talking to people who I was recruiting. And I believe that you should just introduce people to this opportunity, that you shouldn't convince them. Because if you convince them to do this, you're going to have to convince them to study this boring material to pass the test, because that's what it is. People don't, you know, study insurance to pass the day. They do it for a specific reason because they want something, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very dry. So if I have to convince you to do the business, I'm going to have to convince you to study to pass the test. And then once I convince you to do that, then I'm going to have to convince you to get contracted. And then I'm going to convince you to get E&O. And then I have to convince you to buy leads. And then I have to convince you for everything. And that's not conducive to building a business, right? So what I would do is while I'm out in the field, I'm connecting with somebody and learning about them, whether it was cold market or I was talking to someone I knew, and then I would have them watch a video about Family First Life or listen to a call, right? And then once they did that, then I would ask them about what they like about it. Could they see themselves doing the business? Just all kinds of stuff in that general nature. And then I would start the process, introducing them to folks. You introduce them to other people other than yourself. That's a big part of this business, is not being the deal. One of the things that I realize is I'm a scout. I don't want to be the end all be all for the person. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I let them see it for themselves. I just bring them to the opportunity. And then I see if they can, I find out what it is that they want, and I show them how that could be achieved here. And that's it. I, you know, some of you who don't want to recruit, but when you try to convince them to do the business. And that is the worst thing to do, because no one, at least that I know of, who's a child, says, you know, mommy and daddy, I want to be an insurance agent when I grow up. Just not on the list. this is very lucrative. This is a great vehicle. This is a great opportunity to have whatever you want in life. But is it, he used to say, this definitely is not sexy.
No, it's very difficult. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because Andrew always says that he used to talk people out of being an agent, right? And then it's kind of rubbed off on me. Now I'm very short with people. If you want it, it's there. If you don't, I get it, but I'm not here to sell you on it, because at first I wanted to build an agency. Well, I didn't want to, I didn't know what I wanted to do, to be honest with you. But when it was like, you got to start bringing recruits on. Okay. And then I was trying to get every single person to believe. And then just like when I was selling, I was trying to get every person to buy, and it doesn't work. You know what I mean? And then you have to find your rhythm. You have to find your niche. You have to find your tactics and then go with them. And mine was the less I gave, the more I got. It was really weird. So when I cut my script down to how you doing today, you're looking for this, and I'd wait, is that correct? And they would say yes. And then I would say, do you like to quote? Yeah. How do I spell your name, Joe? So I can get it right on the, I know how to spell Joe, but you know what I mean? So I can get it right on the application. When they start spelling their name, it's game on. I'm writing an application. You know what I mean? And then I do my little trial close. But before I did so much speaking and trying to convince people, and like I see these agents and they want to verify. And they're on the phone doing telesales. And I ask them, I said, when you go to the doctor, do you make him show you all your credentials, all his credentials? Or do you just listen what he has for your fix? You know, you broke your leg, you're sick, you got it hurt, pain, you got something. He looks at you, tells you what to do, and you go home. I said, so take that analogy and put it into selling insurance, and you're going to do better. Because you can talk yourself out of deals. You can talk yourself out of recruits.
Oh, so, for sure. And look at Andrew. Do you think he's overselling anything?
He doesn't say five words.
I don't want to say I used to, but when I first got started, that was one of the selling points for me. Was I was like, if this guy can sell all that insurance, I'm going to get rich. Because Andrew, to me, he was like Rain Man. He was super smart, but he was introverted. Like, he didn't talk at all. And very awkward pauses, and he'd cut you off and be like, all right, I gotta go, and then dial tone. And it would crack me up. And I ran with him one time, and I was so uncomfortable in the home that it was like very uncomfortable, because he was just not talking to the person. And it's like, I can only imagine what was going on in their head. You know what I mean? And so I would have to talk to the person because he's sitting over there on his phone playing Angry Birds or something. And it was hilarious. But yet Andrew was consistently closing business.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is completely right. You don't have to, if you have to sell someone on why they're going to take care of their family, that's a problem. And you're better off just telling them, that's not my wife and kids, it's yours. Mm-hmm. So however much you want to spend on them is up to you, but let's get this out of the way right now. Do you care enough about them to protect them? It's a yes or no. If the answer is yes, then let's figure it out. The answer is no. Have a nice day.
Yeah. He told me, you're too nice on the phone. And I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean? He's like, you either got to come to a conclusion. So I want everyone to listen to this. It's very important. And when I started doing this, it worked. My numbers went through the roof for me. I mean, I'm real low compared to FFL, whatever. I'm like number 732 or something. I looked on my numbers today in the company, but he said, you either make them buy or hate you. Come to a conclusion. That's it. Because it doesn't matter. And if you're going to spend all day trying to convince them, you wasted half your day. You could have helped some real families that wanted your help, because there's a lot of low hanging fruit if you have the leads, right? So that was a come to a conclusion. And I think for any new agents or anyone that's struggling out there, and you paid for leads, I know it sounds harsh, but it is the reality of it. And the other thing he said is, why not me? If you see Joe bought 50 acres selling insurance. Isaiah buys property, Tatami, every month on his royalties from insurance. You know what I mean? So why not me? Why can't anyone that's listening to us right now do this? Well, you have to put in the time. You have to go clock in, right? Just like you would a regular job. If you're sick or not, doesn't matter. You know, a lot of people, I heard some people didn't go to convention because, you know, they didn't feel good. They had, you know, excuses. If you, or they don't want to clock in today, oh, I'm not coming to the office. Okay, that's fine. You don't have to come to the office. But when you're not making sales, don't cry, because if you had a real job and you did those things, they'd fire you. And I'm the person that used to fire people. And they said, what do you mean? I said, I didn't fire you. You fired yourself. What do you mean I fired myself? You didn't show up. But I called in. I know, for the fifth time. So we start playing baseball. It's three strikes and you're out. You know what I mean? Because you're just hurting yourself. You hurt your business. You're hurting your coworkers. And you're hurting the clients, right? Your people that you are trying to help. So,
well, I want to touch on that. Did Andrew ever tell you that he uses my in-home clothes? Did he ever tell you about that?
Nuh-uh.
So, is anyone on here ever got, I want to think about it?
Me.
Just tell him no. Just tell him no. You can't think about it. It's either you want to protect your family or you don't. Like, it's one or the other. And so, I had a whole close on how to do that. And then Andrew was like, no, you don't. And I was like, try it. And he went out and he's like, I can't believe you could just tell them no. You can't think about it.
And it works.
And it works. It works because, you know, people aren't used to that. I want to think about it as a nice no. So if you tell them no, you can't think about it, it throws them off. And then they're like, wait a minute. Why this isn't a sales guy? And am I making a bad decision? And people who are blowing you off and a nice no, which is, I want to think about it, they end up, it's almost a takeaway. And then they're like, wait a minute, I can't have this. And then they want to. And it's really funny that worked so well. Wow. In the home was, you know, you can't think about it. It's so, you can either apply or you can decline. Have you ever heard anyone talk about apply or decline the coverage?
No.
Okay. Well, shoot. See, because I'm never on here. I've been, you know.
You've been hiding from us, Joe. Come on, man. We got to get you up more often. Well, we're running out of time here. I want to get you back because I like using perfect. When someone says, oh, no, perfect. And I go right into my script. So now when they say, I want to think about it, I'm going to say no. See what they say. And wait for them to say something. That's amazing. So if anyone's paying attention, let's use that strategy today and try to help some families. Joe, we're going to get you back because I think I just started cracking into some of the knowledge that I'm trying to pull out of you, especially now that I know that you brought some of the biggest people in the business in. Obviously, you know something that a lot of us don't, and we definitely want to get more information from you. Joe takes care of a lot of chickens on his farm. One day we're going to have Uncle Jimmy's salsa and Joe's eggs for breakfast. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
That is coming. That's coming very quick. Anyways, we got to go for now. Joe, thank you so much. Don't let that wasp get you. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.